baby.
Stop. Right on.
The Earl Ingram Show, as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing? You know
we're on the way as Brian Artis and Santana and Gilbert. They're interesting fellows. They dispensed with much of our talk about the Super Bowl. We probably don't need to. I certainly couldn't add any expertise to, for instance, Santana's discussion.
No, did you see the game?
I did see the game. I saw
it. It was a great game.
It was a great game, and I thought all the callers, the guy who called in about that third and one offsides, he was absolutely right. That was a huge play. And I did think Santana, having competed at something in college, I remember, if you ever lose, everything is important in the game you played. If you win, it's just the fanfare at the end that you remember. And I thought that was a very insightful memory thing that he said.
You know, Sandy, I saw something that said that of the top 100 events that's ever been on television, the Super Bowls are 95 of them.
Yeah, I know. That's
amazing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, no, I mean, everybody watches the Super Bowl. People who don't even care about football watch because they, you know, they want to watch the ads, which I did not think lived up to the hype. I thought the Super Bowl was great. I thought the ads were something less than fantastic.
I have to ask you, where is it at? While I'm looking for this one ad, I wanted to ask your opinion on it. This one right here, Sandy. I was watching, and I'm like, I can't believe this is an ad. And it was a Super Bowl commercial for Jesus Christ.
Oh, I saw that. And, you know, to be honest with you, I like the context of the ad. I like the text of the ad. You know, us, I thought it looked to me like it was not necessarily evangelically based ad.
I'm surprised.
But they haven't been able, they've never announced who it was that funded it.
But, I mean, a Jesus commercial on the Super Bowl.
Well, it is it is odd.
I've never seen that before.
No.
And not only that, I don't know how much these commercials cost, but they are the most expensive advertising anywhere.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was an ad that made fun of how expensive the ads
were.
That was
So who put the money up for Jesus commercial?
Well, I just read yesterday or day before yesterday that they hadn't ever announced who it was that funded the Jesus ad. So, well, maybe it was a miracle.
Sandy,
did I say that?
my point is, why now? Never before have we seen anything like that. What is it about today's times that somebody thought time to put a Jesus commercial?
Well,
I'm opposed to Jesus.
Well,
right?
Particularly if it was viewed as proselytizing for it, and I suppose it was in a way. So
had to be.
If that's what it's doing, that is a questionable. You know, there's plenty of people in the world who embrace religions that they think are very worthwhile and have the same possible beneficial effect on mankind as Christianity. So it's a little bit odd, I suppose, to have an ad. I wonder if they would have carried an ad for Islam.
No, and to me,
no, I mean, really, let's say someone came forward with the money and said, we want to run an ad for Islam. Would they have done that?
But even, and I don't even think so much, Sandy, from my perspective of it being a Christian ad, but just a religious ad, period, during that time, and clearly somebody was sending a message, right?
I guess, you know, I was surprised when I saw it. I didn't think through what my reaction ought to be about it.
Which is why I'm asking you.
I thought that the Madison Avenue twist on the word Jesus was an Jesus.
Yes.
Was an interesting spin on it. I thought that the notion of spreading a discussion that involved embracing inclusion, which was what that ad was about, was a good idea. But, you know, the fact of having a religious ad that was essentially meant to spread a particular concept of religion was a little bit surprising.
So our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. I'm just curious to what people thought about it, Sandy, because as I was watching it, I was kind of taken aback because, you know, the commercials are generally things that's eye-catching and and they spend a lot of time with that, but this one, I guess they wanted to get a message across, right? And we're at a point in the society right now where, you know, people say, hey, we need a little more Jesus in our lives.
I thought that the inclusivity concept of the message was interesting because I think it ran a little contrary to the evangelical political message, which seems to be exclusivity in many respects. So, you know, from that standpoint, I looked at the ad and I thought, well, this is a positive spin.
Well, let's go to the phone lines. Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, guys. I want to say that, one, these commercials, which I really fell for during the regular season because they were on, and they were actually talking about the stuff that, you know, Jesus actually stood for. So I thought they were great. But then, of course, I did more research, and I found out that the guy that's behind the Hobby Lobby is the one that's funding these commercials.
The one on the Super Bowl?
Yep. He's been doing it. It's been going on throughout the football season, actually. And like I said, I actually liked some of them because, you know, I was looking at them and going, wow, this is exactly what Jesus talked about, feeding the hungry, bringing in the poor, you know, the immigrant, all these different things. But then after I did more research, I saw it might be a bait and switch type thing where, you know, they get you in the door that way, and then it becomes about Jesus, the multimillionaire or the billionaire. So I'm just saying beware is what I'm saying. Like anything that we hear or read, we should always be aware of the things that we see.
Did you notice the commercial?
Of course I did. Of course.
Okay.
I've been seeing them throughout the season. They've been playing throughout the season. During the season, I called my sister and told her how great I thought it was. And like I said, then I started doing some research on it because I wanted to see, you know, what was the real behind this thing. It's actually called the Servant Foundation is the name of it. They're supposedly a nonprofit, which, of course, is a 501c3. And, you know, the guy that's behind it is the billionaire that runs Hobby Lobby. And again, I just wanted to say one other thing, and then I'm going to let you guys go. But this, we need to have a separation between the military, industrial complex, and football. This is crazy. Pat Tillman, how they brought him up yesterday.
Yeah, well, for
again,
people who don't know, Pat Tillman was a St. Louis, Arizona Cardinal, but St. Louis Cardinal, defensive back who volunteered to go into the military. Was it the Iraq War that he got killed in?
Yeah.
It was the Iraq War, he was killed by friendly fire.
Friendly fire, but they didn't divulge it was friendly fire for they didn't do that until.
No, not at all. It made him sound like.
Yeah.
It was the same recruiting tool that they used on him when he was alive, and you know, and the whole lie that George War Criminal Bush said, and you know, that's why I call him W, War Criminal, fits him well. And, you know, open the gates of hell of this whole mess that we have. But, you know, we talk about the military-industrial complex a lot, and the NFL, I think, is way too close and brings in the whole machismo thing and brings in the whole nationalism thing everything
under one thing. Thank you.
I'd love to hear you guys' feedback on that. Thank you very much
for the call. Well, number one, the military pays.
Yeah, they pay. You know, but it is there is complicity. I mean, you know, I don't know who buys the American flags that cover the whole field. But that's not a cheap cheap thing to have, and almost every team has one that they can unfurl. You know, and the flyovers, those are financed by the government. That can't be cheap. Every NFL game starts with the some four fighter jets flying in formation or whatever.
Right.
And so that's an expensive sortie for them to fly in every NFL city that's hosting a game. And, you know, so I do agree with Tom that the machismo aspect of the NFL makes it very inviting, I suspect, for the military, and that the two of them have an image that is reflective of one another. That's why I keep referring to the fact that Americans keep thinking about warfare and hostility as if it's an NFL rivalry, and I sure hope we don't decide that that China is the Chicago Bears.
You know, Sandy, I'll go back here quickly before we go to the phone line. Sunday's game got two doses, the first coming midway through the second quarter with Patsy Cline's soaring vocals serving as the backdrop for a 30-second advertisement for He Gets Us, a group touting itself as a movement to reintroduce people to Jesus, to the Jesus Christ of the Bible and his confounding love and forgiveness. What? He Gets Us aired two spots within a broadcast charging $7 million for 30 seconds. And the first, He Gets Us urges viewers to be childlike while replaying still and moving images of children ranging from reuniting after quarantine to bathroom etiquette to sharing headphones on a bus. A 60-second ad later in the game. Images of anger and perceived division to tout a message of inclusion. I don't know. Got to go to a break. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy. Space Force. Remember Donald Trump created Space Force?
I do. I've had pictures of Buster Crabbe. My mind.
So, let's see. We've shot down.
For those who aren't ancient, Buster Crabbe played the role of Flash Gordon on ancient TV.
It was absolutely ancient TV.
Yeah,
I remember Buster Crabbe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you and I don't know if there's anybody else in the listening audience, but Sandy, we've shot down three other objects. That means we send one of our aircraft.
Well, then they've used missiles. They've used aircraft.
Yes.
And missiles. It's a fantastic training exercise, if nothing else. And you know, these objects are being found essentially all over the world. There also were some in Latin America that were talked about last week when they saw the Chinese balloon. So it turns out that these objects aren't rare. Apparently, they aren't all necessarily balloon-like look-alikes. I don't know what they are. The military is being kind of cagey about what they look like. At first, they were being cagey enough that people were saying, well, are these alien? Are these from other worlds? And then I think the military came out and said, well, they aren't from other worlds. We know that. So, you know, the information is leaking out about what they are. you know, they might be entirely benign. You know, as I was driving out here, I was thinking, well, what could they be that would be sinister? The only sinister thing I could come up with was some kind of sinister pathogen, some disease that could be released up in the upper atmosphere and descend upon us. I don't think it's that, but shooting that down isn't a very good idea if it is. So, you know,
well,
I think we're going to find out, quite frankly, that number one, whatever's happening, we're doing it too.
So U.S. General doesn't rule out, and this is in today's Huffington Post, doesn't rule out aliens after multiple UFOs shot down by military. This is U.S. General.
I know, but then I read that same thing, and the Huffington maybe, and then several hours later, another general said, well, you don't have to worry about it. Maybe, who knows? You know, the military's never given us the straight skinny about anything. So that's what creates the whole suspicion.
I guess, you know, I would say, especially as I thought back to, you know, the Space Force.
Yeah.
Because under Donald Trump, we created the Space Force. And I guess the Space Force was supposed to let us know if there's maybe life somewhere else. I mean, I don't know what the other purpose of it would be outside of making sure that we have lasers on, you know, asteroids or something.
I suspect, knowing government bureaucracy, there's probably a battle over the jurisdiction of where the Air Force jurisdiction ends
and
the Space Force jurisdiction begins. And 60,000 feet might not be within the Space Force jurisdiction. You know, it's probably something silly like that.
You know, Sandy, I didn't think of it from that perspective, but you probably got something there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who's going to be the one to go and address it?
Right. Is there oxygen there? Yeah, we don't have jurisdiction there. You know, we're the space guys.
Well, you know, Sandy, it does go to show that we're still, and some Americans are still saying that this is China. And even some politicians are loosely saying China.
Well, you know, speculation is so silly. People speculated because the initial fatality levels in this earthquake in Turkey came out at 3,300. And even the BBC was saying it was a much smaller earthquake than the 1999 because that one had 33,000. Well, guess what? They're at 35,000 and still counting on this one. Just because the press says it early on based on speculation. Turns out there's nothing very coherent or very accurate about early speculation. And so all this speculation about what these objects are and the fact they're from China and that they might be, that they're sinister, all of it is just silliness.
Well, Sandy,
somebody put them up in the atmosphere. Who knows? We might find out that it's some weather service.
I mean, I could understand if the speculation is from you and I.
Uh-huh.
But when government officials should know better, would you say?
Yes, and in fact, even before the Chinese balloon was found, I'm going to attribute it to China because the government has. Just in the several weeks before that, there was some interesting news media coverage about these private weather services and the extent to which they put up into the atmosphere and the stratosphere some very expensive and sophisticated weather monitoring devices. For all we know, you know, these objects might have been put up by some U.S. weather service, the private service, that has invented something that they have a patent on that they don't want other weather services to be able to duplicate, that they use for projecting weather circumstances. So, you know, I think before we jump to conclusions about all this, we all ought to just kind of take a breath.
Let me ask you, because a guy like Elon Musk has its own network of satellites, right?
Right, yeah. Starlink.
Yeah, so who does that space belong to?
Space?
Yes.
Well, I think that's one of the things that was in the Space Force announcement, that was there was going to be this important situation of claiming essentially ownership over sectors. Space is going to be a real hard one to claim. And I suspect the space you actually occupy is the space you own, meaning that your satellite and its trajectory.
All right, listen, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday, that means Mondays with Sandy Williams. So you know, Sandy, I'm just trying to figure out, as we move closer to warmer weather, not only in this country but in Ukraine, both of those entities, both Russia and Ukraine, are planning for a spring offensive. Spring is around the corner. Russia's already moving into the offensive. The things I've been reading about Ukraine is they're waiting on these tanks, and they certainly can't fight Russia tooth and nail, not right now. So what is it? Russia's looking to damage them as much as they possibly can before they're even in a position to have a spring offensive. That the damage that could be done could be so you know, overwhelming to Ukraine that they're asking, hey, we need things now.
Well, clearly Russia, you know, to
short as might.
Well, just reading all the various sources you have, and as I said, when war starts, truth ends, so you have to try and sift through everyone's news and try and figure out what the truth might be behind it. And it might not square with what any single pundit is saying about the war. But what is clear, just using common sense and the news, is that Russia understands that there's military power is going to be increased on the Ukrainian side when they receive these new weapons from the European nations and from the United States, and so they're going to try and seize the moment and strike while they don't have that power. Meanwhile, the spring offensive is a little bit of a misnomer because the time period that is most troublesome for ground war in Ukraine is March and early April, because that's the thaw season when the ground turns to mud. And everyone looks backwards in time and scratches their head and said, why did Russia pick the thaw as the time period in which to start their offensive? Because they had frozen turf for about 2 weeks after the beginning of the war, and then they had mud. And they got mired in the mud, and that was sort of the problem they had. When they couldn't topple Ukraine in a two-week period, they ended up being slowed down by the mud and the weather situation. So, you know, to the extent there's going to be a big ground offensive, it's probably better staged now or in April. And March is probably an unlikely time for there to be a lot of troop movements that involve tanks and armed troop carriers, et cetera, because those things are all tracked vehicles, have trouble in mud. So, you know, everything I've read suggests that the battles have increased in their intensity. The number of manpower, the number of military being thrown into the battle on both sides has increased materially, that it is staged still along a battle line that is in the Donbass, in the Luhansk area. Soledar has fallen. Bakhmut has long been in contest. It looks like the battle lines are being pushed slowly by Russia in the direction they want to push them, but it's an ebbing and flowing thing. They move forward, they get pushed back. They move forward, they get pushed back. And what is clearly true, because both sides are conceding it, is that is that lives, military lives, are being lost at an alarmingly high level on both sides right now.
You know, Sandy, I don't know. I think, again, the American people don't seem to be interested anymore at, you know, what's happening in Ukraine. You don't hear the citizens' outcry as much as we did earlier. Have we just gotten to the point where this is with us now? And
well, unfortunately, the Americans tend to ignore wars that aren't consuming American lives. And so we were able to tolerate the Afghani intervention on our part for 20 years, mainly because while there were lives being lost, they were small in number. We have a voluntary military. We didn't have a young American men at risk of being sent off to the war if they didn't so volunteer. And it was just money. And it was money flowing at a rapid clip. Well, when you look at the Ukrainian thing, if you stop worrying about the international implications of this, then it's just money. And I'm afraid the American public, because of the advantage we have of the Atlantic and Pacific, the huge moats we have separating us from warfare generally, allows us to just ignore something that Europe can't ignore, that Russia is not ignoring, obviously. Ukraine is in the middle of it. So, and North Africa can't ignore it because they're losing foodstuffs. You know, we for a while had this flashing in our eyes because the price of gasoline was going up. That's moderated. So, you know, to the extent that Americans are going to watch this, I'm afraid it only relates to us and the American public when it's pinching us in some fashion.
Let me ask you, Sandy, what, you know, at times I don't understand what the American people are focused on, because...
Well, yesterday, 75 million of them, or some huge number. I don't know what the number is. It was huge that watched the Super Bowl.
I know, but Sandy, you spoke about, you know, what they say may be 70,000 people who died in the earthquake.
In the earthquake, yeah. Well, right now it's... at 35.
Yeah, but they think it may double that.
Yeah, yeah. And the problem is the news media is ready to dismiss these quickly. The United States sends aid, but it's always in the form of money. You know, American public doesn't get involved very much. There are countries in Europe where people roll up their sleeves and participate in the process of trying to solve this horrendous humanitarian
problem. All of those people, not just the ones that are dead, that are homeless.
Well, and that's going to create a huge migration wave. I mean, people emigrate from countries that get destroyed in natural disasters, and there already have been huge out-migrations from Syria, fairly large out-migrations from Turkey, and now... that number is going to increase substantially, and they will probably want to out-migrate to Europe.
So let's talk about the United Nations doesn't have the resources to address anything of that magnitude. And truly the only nation that's capable of doing anything measurable is the United States of America.
Well, actually, Russia also participates materially in those areas.
But they're at war.
Well, they're at war. But I suspect they will. United States,
China,
is clearly in a position to do a great deal. And China. You know, the great powers are the ones that have the capacity with large aircraft to fly in supplies and to fly in personnel and to accomplish things that could actually... moderate the horrible circumstance. I mean, if you saw we talked about it last week, but I mean, the videos of what this earthquake did, it's horrific. I mean, at one point my yard got flooded and I watched the power. When Mother Nature is doing this kind of stuff, we are helpless. You know, the human beings are helpless in the face of disasters.
So when you look at those buildings that they erected, they're clearly not erected the same way that the buildings are in this country. But
you mean like the condominium in Florida that collapsed from rainfall?
Yeah. Well, That's an exception.
Or like the piece of concrete that fell down in a parking structure at the O'Donnell. I mean, the fact is that construction is a sophisticated process that requires adhering to building standards. And if you build now, like I built a house in Utah at one point, I had to conform to seismic standards there, even though earthquakes are not likely in Utah. People worry in various parts of the country and in parts of the world about building to seismic standards to be able to withstand earthquakes, okay? And clearly, these buildings in Turkey, the ones that toppled like I saw the videos of, were not built to standards that could withstand the earthquake they experienced. And the Turkish government, I guess, to try and placate the public that they were doing something, I think within days of the earthquake, had arrested 150 people who were in the construction design and development business who were involved with building the buildings that fell down in such a calamitous way. But, you know, all of this should tell us that we need to deal with Mother Nature as we develop things, and we should look back at the global climate change and realize that when people are building things in floodplains, when people are building things on the coasts, when people are building things that might be involved with landslides. I mean, California has plenty of, we almost annually see pictures of houses that have slid down the bank of someplace in California because of landslides.
Hey, well, because people are willing to take the risk.
Right, and people have built in floodplains in New Orleans area for a long time, and then the government, until recently, would come in and bail them out and even give them sufficient money so they could rebuild.
You know, Sandy, there are enough issues to deal with inside of our own country. But when you, for heaven's sakes, when you see something of that magnitude, it requires a tightening of the belt of everybody, right? Because those people aren't going to just need support for, you know, a couple of weeks.
No.
Decades.
Well, and the other thing is that a thing like that earthquake destroys the sanitation system, okay? Cholera is a follow-on to these kind of disasters. You know, the human sanitation problem
can right.
spread disease like mad in a situation like they've experienced. And they've even started talking about that. That, you know, the next wave could be the follow-on huge disease problem that's created by this kind of situation.
So when you have a situation like that, Sandy, and then it's Turkey, where, you know, we certainly have communications with Turkey, Syria, which right next door, you know, it's not easier to deal with the Syrian government. You like to use the terms complicated.
Well, I noticed it was complicated because there's an area of the border between Turkey and Syria that was going to be opened by fiat from the United Nations, and Russia used their Security Council veto to veto the reopening of that because Turkey was very worried about reopening that part of the border because it was Kurdish Syrians that were occupying the other side of the border, and it was all complicated. Now they're trying to rush to try and figure out how to open that border so that aid can flow into Syria, which, you know, parts of Syria suffered the same consequences as Turkey
right.
in this earthquake.
But certainly not to the degree, you know.
Well, I think the areas that were affected to the same degree. Aleppo apparently had immense problems, but I think it wasn't as developed. It didn't have all the high-rise buildings and things that could be demolished in the same way.
You know, Sandy, sometimes as human beings, we can really kind of be just horrible people. Because when you look over and see what has taken place there, we all should, at some way, shape, or form. You know, it used to be in this country, when something of that magnitude happened, you'd see commercials on television asking for people to make donations, churches would make donations. That's still happening.
Well, I don't know, but all I remember is that the tsunami, the massive tsunami that happened about 20 years ago on the Pacific,
right.
okay? I remember the law firm I was in and sending money, setting up a process for gathering money to send it to tsunami victims. It was a worldwide thing. It was done heavily in America. I haven't seen anything like that happening right now with respect to the earthquake victims. It's interesting and sort of surprising to me that it hasn't, because clearly this earthquake is a tsunami. I mean, it's limited in its geographic scope, but the horror of what it's causing is huge in the geography in which it occurs.
And you know, Sandy, normally after the big one, there's a follow-up, you know, similar to people who have heart attacks and strokes, have the big one, and then the second one comes. Normally there's a follow.
Well, this one had the aftershock. I mean, the aftershock started almost.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to our good friend Andy from Beaver Dam. Hey, good morning, Andy. How you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call.
Not too bad, Earl. Earl and Sandy, one place that really has, which you were talking earlier, in building construction is in California against earthquakes. I mean, I was in San Francisco several years ago once, walking around a big construction site, and you got these shock absorbers and everything all at the base, you know, where they start the high rise. And, you know, they really, after over 100 years, they've learned a lot about earthquakes and stuff. The other question is, I thought I heard on the news that as far as aid, especially to the Syrians, and I think even there's talk about the rebels, that Assad wanted the money to be filtered in through him to give to the victims. And but, you know, there's always a chance. They send the money, but then it gets diverted to some other, task or something like that. All the money doesn't get to where it's badly needed. And I'm wondering if that is one aspect of aid to these disasters that you have to be watchful of and so forth. So
I think it's always been the case that money is probably the one that's most dangerous to send into an area like that, because who knows how it gets used. That's why the Red Cross and the Red Crescent and these various aid agencies are so much more reliable and a much better way probably to funnel money in support of helping folks. I think they have a group called the White Helmets that are the Syrian aid group as well. But it is fraught with problems. They've got the Kurds. They have the rebels. They have all these factions that are politically at each other's throats, who are probably disinclined to try and help one another out of this disaster. So I suspect that sending money to Assad directly is only going to help some folks.
You know, Sandy, Andy is correct, and so you get caught between, you want to do something to help people who you know are really in a tough situation, but like anything else, we don't know where the money is going. We have no idea where that money is going, and sometimes that's the reason that people won't send the resources. Yeah, understandably,
and,
so.
Yeah, and you know, when we think of natural disasters, we think of tornadoes and floods and hurricanes and earthquakes are clearly horrific and irresistibly powerful in the circumstance when they are. I was in a very small one in San Francisco once, and sitting on at a sushi bar, and the place began to feel like jello. I asked the guy if a truck was going by, but then it kept going by, and he said, "No, that's an earthquake." And it turns out that it was an earthquake that caused little damage. It had high seismic numbers. It was centered in San Jose or something. But for the millisecond that it was happening, I my stomach sank and I felt like something was very wrong. And to think that something like that could happen powerfully and for a long period of time must be terrifying.
Hey, good morning, Jacob. How are you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah, I'd just like to say I think this is an important example of why government regulations are necessary and are important. You know, what you saw, unfortunately, in Turkey and Syria, almost 40,000 folks killed in this earthquake. You know, that happened on the West Coast in America. It would have probably been a few hundred people at the most because of our building regulations. And every election season, you always hear these, you know, large landowning interests, these large real estate interests are almost always partisan Republicans who are purchasing Republican politicians to push their message that we should completely deregulate the building industry. We need regulations. We need, you know, earthquake safety in places like the West Coast of America. You know, I mean, in the Midwest, you know, how would you feel about any landlord who told their tenant, no, you don't need a basement. You know, good luck with a tornado, though. I mean, we actually need safety regulations in place. And why Republican politicians are opposed to safety regulations is obvious. They're all corrupt and they're all on the take, taking bribes from these industries who want to be deregulated.
All right, Jacob, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you know, regulations, clearly, I don't know who can argue against regulations when it comes to...
Well, I mean, Jacob makes a good point about regulation, and, you know, regulation with respect to building, but regulation and sound regulation is fundamental to some of the reasons why America is looked at by the rest of the world as, for instance, the financial center of the world, because our financial regulations are very important to the trust that the rest of the world puts in American securities and in the American security markets, because they are well regulated by the SEC. And this whole wave of effort to, for instance, well, you know, getting rid of the Glass-Steagall Act and the regulation of banks, people look backwards on that and say, gosh, I wonder if that was a good idea, because it clearly led to banking activity that was much more unregulated and probably, in some respects, the withdrawal of the Glass-Steagall Act, the termination of it, might have led to the 2008 financial crisis, because so many banks were putting their money into these mortgage-backed securities that ended up collapsing and creating the financial crisis. So regulation is important, and the movement to deregulate everything and to privatize everything beyond regulation is going to choke the golden goose. You know, the golden goose of America is sound regulation.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You can join us. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.